Blow the horn. Go.
Everything that we do every day, we want to be a champion.
Get your mind right and let's go. Do the little things. Win every day.
It's the only place they play football.
Everything with an attitude.
Alabama, you listen.
He fumbled and Alabama has recovered.
I told you what they were going to do.
Touchdown, Alabama.
It's 13 national championships.
Rose up!
I don't give a shit who we're playing.
Nothing they can play against. And make his ass quit. That's our framework. That's our MO with the team.
Daniel Moore, get your canvas ready.
All right. Hello and welcome to another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. You know, some chocolate cake just tastes better than other chocolate cake. And as Bama fans, some wins are just more fun than others. Tom, beating up on the mouth-breathing little brothers from across the state sure was fun, wasn't it?
It was, man. It was a blast. It's always fun to kick their ass. I was hoping it would kind of be like it was with Tommy Tuberville's last game when it was a 36-0 romp. And unfortunately, we had a couple lapses, or, you know, it could have been even sweeter because we could have blanked them, which would have been even better.
Yeah, I think just a couple of, you know, two little miscues, and it could have been a true shutout on the scoreboard. But 42-14, you know, that certainly sounds good. And it certainly followed the form, if you will, of some of the big wins throughout the season. A little close back and forth. We didn't trail this team, but we have trailed other opponents early. And then we've just gone on to, you know, post big margins of victory. This one just seemed to fall right in line with that template.
It did, and it was nice to see. You know, I obviously had to watch it on TV, and so one thing Gary Danielson mentioned early in the game was that McElwain said that, you know, we were going to go for it. We were going to try not to be in position where we had to kick field goals. And you and I talked last year about we wanted this team to take more shots before they got in the red zone. So I guess as I'm thinking about this tonight, The biggest thing for me is if we had to kick a field goal, it was going to be a 30-yarder that Shelley could kick. By damn, we were not going to be in a position to have to attempt a 45-plus yarder at all cost. And I like the aggressiveness and the play calling early whenever they were kind of focusing on the run, Auburn was, and I just liked the way that we really kind of attacked them from all sides of the field and really open things up.
Isn't that like the first step in recovery is admitting you have a problem? And so, you know, if it's outside of 35 yards, we're not going to kick it. And so that means we just have to be a little more creative in our play calling. And I think at one point we were maybe going to think about attempting a long kick, and coach kind of changed his mind and said, no, we're going to go for it here. And so when we went for it on fourth down, it was all about recognizing that we have a problem and solving it, you know, through other means.
But we've talked about, like in the LSU game, that we would get down to the 30-yard line and we would start calling dumbass plays. I mean, like, it'd be like, okay, where can we find this in the playbook? But instead, you know, the flea flicker was a nice design, and Kenny Bell showed some good maturity against a young secondary. We obviously saw the youth of Auburn big time. I think they had, like, five freshmen and they're two deep in their secondary, and you could really tell. But both that play and the play to Smelly, you know, they were just really good calls, and you could tell that we had worked on them a lot and everybody had to do their part right, and everybody did. I mean, just everybody was where they were supposed to be to make action work. And it was kind of like the LSU game where we did that play call to Mays that everybody said, this is a great play call. And, you know, if it would have worked, or it should have worked, it was a great play. Well, those two plays to Smelly and Bell, everybody did the right thing this time. Nobody missed a block. And so therefore the plays were able to work.
You know, I want to jump all over, and I'm just going to jump in with both feet on the offense. And I want to pick right up on the flea flicker. You know, that's kind of a tricky dick play. And you know, there are going to be a lot of fans that are going to watch the game and say that we just kind of randomly put that play into motion. You know, fans that are going to be a little more observant are going to say, you know, that's a pass play off run action, and they were stacking the box. And they certainly were, and that's what helped make that play a little more successful. But on the play before, the play just before we ran the flea flicker, we threw the ball to the right flat, and Kenny Bell was lined up on the left. And I just, you know, and again, I had to watch it through TV as well, but you could tell on the TV that the DB, the cornerback, was giving Kenny Bell about 10 yards. And in fact, before the snap, the cornerback moved away from Kenny to even give him more yards, you know, more of a cushion. And I thought, boy, we need to watch that, because we could run a little quick hitch off of that. And with Kenny's speed, he could make a man miss. And maybe we turn that into something. On the very next play, Kenny lined up on the right side of the field and still had a similar cushion. And normally you think, you know, we're calling plays, maybe a couple plays in advance. I think we saw that play when Kenny was on the left, moved him over to the right to see if we'd get the same coverage and the same distance, and then kind of pulled the trigger on that because of the coverage that they were putting on Kenny.
That's very possible. You would hope that they saw that from the press box and saw, you know, they were giving him that much cushion, and that has to be the youth of their secondary. And, you know, you and I saw the LSU-Auburn game where, you know, one of their cornerbacks specifically was beat, you know, two times on the exact same go route. And so in that example, you know, gave them 10, 12 yards, literally didn't even get any contact or whatever. And, you know, LSU receiver ran right by him. And so you wonder, I guess a freshman corner can't play the bump and run maybe if he just doesn't have that skill set. But you are surprised that either A, they weren't playing more. I guess what I'm trying to say is Auburn's deficiency was in the secondary. You know, right. Their upfront play was pretty good and was getting better during the season. So I'm kind of surprised that they committed their safeties to the box like they did and really didn't give their corners help over the top in this ball game.
They really didn't, and that really showed through on the flea flicker to Kenny. And it also just, you know, that and some miscommunication on the touchdown to Smelly, because, I mean, he was just so wide open that was just clearly blown coverage, a blown call. And, you know, I'm not going to take down the seven. I thought it was well executed, but he was so wide open that clearly someone busted some coverage there.
Well, you know, on that play, what was so interesting about that, because they also have a lot of youth at linebacker, and when you go back and look at that, you're faking the ball to start with, and then literally the running back runs out into the left flat, so he takes the outside backer with him, and then you've got your tight end on the left side, who basically runs a corner route to the right, which is drawing the one linebacker, and your outside wide receiver is doing a post, which takes the safety. And the only guy that really could pick him up was the middle linebacker. And Smelly did such a great job of blocking on the right side at tight end. And then literally when he released, like you said, he ran right at the middle linebacker.
Yep.
And the guy still just stood there and was like looking at the running back in the left flats, and that guy was already picked up. And so that was just, you know, you and I've seen blown coverages from our own team, and that was just a situation where, you know, once he ran past him, it was done. But I love that we called that play. I guess the other thing I want your opinion on there is I love that we called that play right after their really good punter shakes a punt. And Gary Danielson said on the telecast, I'm sure everybody said, you know, there's blood out there. You know, now's the time to take a shot. And that's what Alabama did. And I'm sure the playbook has a lot of teams to do that. But we haven't always done that. It was just nice there at the 35-yard line that we pull that out of our bag of tricks and we go for broke on that first play. I love that.
Yeah, and I think that's the time you do it, right? When you kind of have them, you know, short field and they're a little frustrated and the defense is trotting back out and, you know, we've been driving the ball and moving the ball and to throw it just right over their heads. You know, we talked about two plays, the flea flicker to Kenny Bell and Smelly releasing from some run action, from some blocking action, you know, crosses the middle linebacker and is open. And so they're committing so much to the run. I guess it's a good thing we made hay in a passing game because surely they stacked up Trent, right?
No. You know, we'd be remiss if we didn't talk a little bit about this. I kind of thought his Heisman run moment was the Ole Miss game. And you and I have talked about this earlier in the year that I kind of felt like Trent was going to be better than Mark, you know, a year and a half or so ago. And it kind of goes back to that big run against Arkansas in 2009 as a true freshman where he kind of bounced off like eight or nine guys. And It was just like you scratch your head and you're like, this guy's different. And, you know, for him to come in on that stage and, you know, I almost kind of feel like it was meant to be. And I'm sure that's the Crimson Glasses, but, you know, for him to have that last run that put him over 200 yards, which was the first time he had ever done that, and there's 7 minutes left in the game, and Saban says, okay, shut it down, you're done, and he doesn't see another play the rest of the game, but it was almost like, you've done your resume. You've done as much as you can do, and if it's meant to be, it's meant to be. And I just love the fact that he was able to get that last run that, you know, allowed it to go across the wire for all the, you know, the columnists that don't bother watching football but vote on it. And they're going to see that 203 yards and be like, damn, that's pretty special.
Yeah, 203 yards, 7.5 per carry, one touchdown on a reception. I got a kick out of the reception because we tried to run that touchdown to Trent, and they bottled that up pretty well. And we just said, well, okay, we'll just throw it to him for a touchdown. And then to your point, you know, right there with about 7 minutes left in the game, we just completely, you know, took away his helmet and said, sit down, work's done.
And that's just awesome in itself, right? I mean, we talked about this in other games. Saban could have really padded the stats. He could have said, well, damn, 203 looks good, but let's try for 250 at that point.
Yeah, you know, he could have, and that's certainly fine. And Justin Fowler, you know, came in and ran for a 16-yard touchdown. And so you think, you know, another 16 and another touchdown would certainly look good in the books too. But, you know, it's almost like a sliding scale. I'll take a buck 50 and two touchdowns, or, wow, you put up 200. That's a number all by itself. Let's sit down, and we've made a good showing for the voters. You've certainly performed well in this game. We've won the game, and you're healthy, so let's call it a day.
No, I'm very glad that they were able to get the play there to put it over the 200 yards for him. Hey, what about McCarron? Because there's been a lot of talk after the game that McCarron's turned a corner and he's really matured, and I don't want to take away from McCarron because McCarron had a good game. McCarron hit that plateau that we talk about. You know, we want the Alabama quarterback to throw 20 passes. We want you to ideally complete 16 of them. Okay, you were 18 of 23. We'll take that. You didn't throw a pick. We'll take that. You know, he had a very good day. But, you know, I'm a little bothered by the sack at the 5-yard line that allowed them to recover a fumble in the end zone. And maybe I'm just trying to pick something apart because everything else was so great. But he did two or three pump fakes there. And, you know, literally Barrett Jones gets beat, you know, by their defensive end who's got some speed. And Barrett's just come back from a high ankle sprain. And we know he's not 100% healthy just 3 weeks ago that happened. You can't be sitting there doing that at the 5-yard line. You know, if we're fortunate to play another ball game, play like that can cost you the game. I just, great as he played, that's the one play that really kind of bugged me.
Well, and that one needs to stand out to you. You know, a couple different things to kind of chase on there, but I just want to jump on that loose ball because you're exactly right. As a quarterback, he should have a clock in his head, you know, how many seconds he has before the rush is going to get there. Down by the goal line, you probably take a tick off that clock. And so he should have been getting rid of the ball, even if he was just throwing it away. And to take that sack, he shouldn't have taken the sack at all. He should have thrown the ball away. But the fact that he did and he fumbled, you know, for a little bit, I must say that's the sophomore coming out of him. But, you know, it's no less frustrating because the rest of his day, you know, was the Tommy formula for SEC quarterback success, you know, 78%. You know, right at the 23 mark, right, hovering right around that, you know, 20, 16 for 20, like you said, you gave the numbers, 180, 84 yards, three touchdowns. That's certainly significant. One thing that, you know, sort of gave me a little heartburn as it happened is, you know, the ball's on the ground and McCullough's doing his best Steen imitations, just kind of standing around looking, and thought, boy, that right guard position, people just like to watch that ball roll into the end zone or kind of roll around and be recovered by, you know, someone else.
And then Barrett, to be fair, man, I know his ankle's busted, but, you know, you learn how to recover a ball when you're playing park ball. I mean, he went and pounced on it, and it just flew out.
Yeah, they were going for the ball, and it just, you know, unfortunately, it just didn't bounce their way. I'm going to give Barrett a little bit of a pass. I'm kind of poking at McCullough, but I'm going to give Barrett a little bit of a pass because at this level, you don't sit out 2 weeks and come back, you know, in midseason form. And in fact, you know, I kind of ISO'd on him, you know, a couple of drives, you know, different plays and future drives. And he was taking the bull rush and he was taking the spin moves and he was performing at a level that you would expect him to. You know, he just had to, you know, maybe get beat once to really piss him off.
No, that's possible. What else jumped out at you on offense, you know, that you wanted to comment on?
Couple things, you know, Warmack pulling a couple times. I think you and I view this differently. I think he has success when he pulls and he can really pave some way. And, you know, saw him do that a couple times and had some success there. Fluker, he plays well when he plays well, but, you know, right from the start, first play of the game, you know, he jumps off sides.
I knew you were going to see that and think about it because it's like, son of a gun.
It's just every game, and maybe he only does it once or twice, but it's every game that he does something. And you think, I can't remember the last, you know, Vlahos hasn't had a flag in a couple of games, and Barrett hasn't played, but, you know, I can't think of the last time that he's had a flag. And Warmack even, maybe he got one in the last game. I can't remember. I can't remember us getting, you know, we're not a very penalized team. And so when you start thinking of individual offensive linemen, I can't think of very many times. But Fluker gets one every game and sometimes more than one a game. And you think, man, this just set the tone right here, first play of the game, back him up.
Well, the only thing I will say about that, and I agree with you, Fluker does seem like he gets a bunch of them. The only thing I will say about that is that we had just the one. And so the only good thing I can take away from that is that, you know, we had the delay of game that was in the third quarter, which was frustrating. That should never happen. But we had the block in the back by DePriest, which Saban kind of jumped his shit about.
Yep.
And then we had that one false start. So having started off the year really well and kind of fading into the 5, 6, 7 penalties a game the past couple weeks, it was nice that that was the only one of those dumbass penalties that we got in the ball game. But it does seem like it's happening more from Fluker, so I'd love to be a bug on the wall on the bench and find out what was said to Fluker when he came off the field after that first series.
Yeah, at the end of the day, you know, if you told me that, you know, we were going to average one offensive line penalty for the game, then okay, I'll sign up for that because I've seen years where we'll get 5 or 6, you know, across the offensive line. But when it's the same person over and over, you think, man, we're only getting one and it's always the same person. This is preventable.
Right.
It's not random, you know, it's not random. Somebody gets turned around and called for a holding, you know, because that could almost happen every play for any team. And so it's not something like that. It's just, man, hold your water, man. Hold your water.
Hey, what do you think about McCullough being in there in place of Steen? Just curious what you think about that. They, you know, Coach Saban said it was going to be a battle, and I think he's just being kind of nice. I mean, you know, I've jumped kind of Steen's butt a bunch, and I think Steen has definitely improved since the beginning of the season. And so having only started 5 games to start the, you know, coming into this season, he's definitely getting better. But boy, where would we be without McCullough? Because having him in there at guard again and having Barrett Jones at left tackle, man, the big uglies just look a little more cohesive to me.
That's exactly right. McCullough's a glue player, and we've gone into depth talking about, you know, him being a senior that's kind of hung around and it paying dividends, and that's exactly right. And you think of the Quanjo brothers, unfortunately, both of them suffering knee injuries, and, you know, they were getting, you know, some playing time, especially Cyrus. You know, just the unfortunate, tragic loss of Aaron Douglas in the spring. And you start taking away those, and we're talking football and because that's what we do. And so, you know, looking at it only through those lens, you take those people away from being able to perform, and you think that, you know, we're still bringing off of McCullough, who was potentially, you know, competing for a starting job in the spring and in the fall camp anyways, kind of got tucked away in the bench. And then when Steen gets, you know, concussed, you know, McCullough's right there ready to go. You know, never missed a beat, you know, didn't get, you know, discouraged when it looked like he wasn't going to rotate in, even looked like Cyrus was going to rotate in and provide, you know, that swing, you know, allow Barrett to move back to guard potentially, in which case McCullough just would have been covered up. And so through a series of unfortunate events, you know, McCullough persisted and now he's contributing and potentially, you know, he's going to be able to say that, you know, he was on the starting offensive line for a team that, you know, played for it all.
That's true. I just wonder where we'd be without him. I just wonder if, you know, a couple games would have been a little tighter if we wouldn't have had him and we would have had to rely a little bit more on Steen. Hey, one other thing I was curious about What did you think of how quickly we went for two there to make it a 21-point margin? And how'd you like the acting job by Barrett Jones? I wonder if, you know, especially on TV, it's pretty quick. You know, how many people do you think saw that play set up where Barrett Jones starts at left tackle and he quickly motions out? It's kind of, thanks, coach, I'm coming back off a high ankle sprain, but I'm quickly going to have to sprint my butt from left tackle to be the inside guy on the right side on a two-point conversion.
You know, we wouldn't have called that and we wouldn't have executed that if there had been too much lingering with his ankle. It's kind of a fun play, you know, for him. At the same time, I wouldn't have done it. I would not have, you know, run him out there with his ankle. You know, you maybe do it with someone else. You maybe do it with just, you know, one of the tight ends. I don't think it has to get too cutesy. I think sometimes we get cutesy because we think the opponent's going to get cutesy. Had that been a Tennessee or Georgia or Florida, someone that's going to play us a little more straight up and, you know, not have, you know, some high school gadgetry in their playbook, I don't know that we would have done it against that type of team. But the fact that we went for two there, you know, that's the sheet that every coach, you know, when you get a coaching job, you know, they laminate them and pass them out and you look at point differentials. And so, you know, to kick it would have made it a 20-point game, you know, that's still three scores, three touchdowns, and they lead. So why not go for two, make it a 21, a true three-score game, 21 points, and just in case, because you don't know, you know, we were wholesale giving away touchdowns, you know, may as well be up by an even multiple of seven.
I just thought it was another example of we had really spent a lot of time. I mean, you wonder how long we've had that play in the playbook because we put out there very quickly and just the action involved, there was two or three reads on that play even, and just everybody ran everything exactly the right way. I mean, it just, either it was a really good week of practice or these guys really had their head in the playbook this week and really wanted to, you know, to make a change from that Auburn score a year ago, because we pulled these two or three out and it seemed like we pulled them all out at the exact right time and they worked to perfection. I mean, you know, on that play, nobody was anywhere near Michael Williams.
No, we dialed it up just perfectly. And like you said, the timing, and it was so bang, bang after the touchdown that for a second I thought, well, did Milliner not score and we're having to run this play for the touchdown? Because it just happened so quick. But I think the TV crew did a decent job, you know, of pointing out that Barron was out wide. You know, of course, then they kind of, you know, highlight on it. But, you know, it was a fun play. I don't know if necessarily I would have done it.
Well, one other thing that I will point out, because it's just fun for the fan, when Barrett Jones did move out there, the rush end who was standing up, he started pointing to Barrett Jones and he started looking back at his other defensive guys, screaming at them like, is this my guy? Am I supposed to go out there? And none of them were paying him any attention. They were just watching the play. And so he was in Never Never Land because he ended up not blitzing the quarterback. He didn't cover Barrett. He stayed halfway in between because he really didn't know what to do. So it was kind of funny because it accomplished its goal. All right, defense, what jumps out first for you on defense?
You know, I've kind of tried to think of a word every week to kind of summarize how I think the defense played. And this defensive performance is really lost in history, is how I would categorize it. It was a record-setting output. We held them to 44 yards in three quarters. We held them to 138 yards for the game, which a 10-year low for Auburn in terms of yardage. But history will only remember the 14 points scored. And so the dominant performance by the defense, who the defense shut them out, will be, over time, will have that 14 points hung on them.
Right. It'll be lost because everybody will just look at the score.
But it was a sensationally dominating performance. You know, 44 yards through three quarters when the game was being contested. You know, a pick six by the defense. We hold them to 3 of 15 first down attempts. That's just a devastating defensive output.
No, it is. What did you think about the fourth quarter for a second? Obviously, we scored, you know, very quickly on the pick six, and obviously we scored quickly on Trent's run. So the time of possession is kind of skewed because we didn't have the ball that much. But I was very glad. It kind of feeds off what you just said. I was very glad because we had given up 14 points in these other crappy ways that Auburn was so far behind in the fourth quarter that they had to go for that fourth down play and didn't get points on the board with the field goal because it wouldn't help. And I was glad that that helped the margin stay at the 14 points for Auburn.
Yeah, I was too. I'd hate for them to get up to 17 and then really to crack the scoreboard. I'm pleased that they weren't able to do that.
Hey, what'd you think about the two fourth down stands by the defense?
You know, I thought we played well. I thought we shut them down. I thought we had them pretty well dialed up. I'm not sure that I agree with everything that Auburn called in those circumstances, but I like the way that our defense, you know, really stood up to the challenge and shut them down.
It was hilarious on one of those. I like the fact that they literally went for it on 4th and 5, and Michael Dyer tries to run out of the Wildcat. Excuse me, 4th and 1, but out of the Wildcat.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Chapman and Jesse Williams, you know, Jesse Williams has improved every week. And, you know, we talked about last week not having the 4 nose tackles and what it meant in the Mississippi State game.
Mm-hmm.
But Josh Chapman and Williams really, really got some good penetration. And it kind of looked to me like they were both taking on double teams, both of them in the middle.
Yeah, they were physical. And, you know, after missing some time last week, they came back ready to play. They definitely wanted to participate in this game. Everyone has had this game, you know, circled on their calendar and sort of the never again, you know, mantra. Everyone was ready to play. And those two guys really, really stepped in. And on that play, you know, like you said, took on double teams and shut it down. You know, why are you running a Wildcat on 4th and 1? I just don't agree with that play call in that situation. But, you know, that's what they did, and, you know, the DTs shut it down.
There was two other plays I just want to touch on that I just noticed, and Gary Danielson kind of commented on this, but this just talks about how prepared we really are. And you know how these players talk after the game, like, we saw that coming, we worked on that in practice all week?
Sure.
Well, there was one quick play where Auburn goes to do a end around to the wide receiver. And Dre is up there man on man, you know, in bump and run coverage. And he sees the wide receiver take off to the backfield. And he immediately, I'm sure you saw this too, but he immediately hightails it. And it's like he's chasing him because he immediately recognizes that the ball is coming to him. And so not only did he almost chase him down in the backfield, but then we were able to make the play to begin with just because of, you know, the linebacker was able to stay at home and do his job as well and not over pursue. And so not only did Jarrell Harris make the right play on one side, but Dre would have cleaned up the scraps 2 or 3 yards down the field. And it's just, I guess that's the only example I'll talk about tonight, but it's like, they were all doing the little things, and they knew exactly where they needed to be at all times.
Yeah, there was some talk, you know, and you and I talked about, you know, guarantee we're going to see some option with Kyle Frazier, especially, you know, after the yards that we allowed Georgia Southern. You know, the trick there is that's what Georgia Southern does. That's their DNA. That's who they are. They run the triple option. You can't just go out to practice one day and say, well, let's kind of flick it around and we'll be able to gain some yards against the number one defense in the country. You can't do that. It either has to be who you are and you're solely committed to it and you have variation upon variation, you know, of option plays. You can't just go out and half-ass it. And that seemed to be what, you know, Auburn wanted to do, thinking that they would get some yards. And, you know, I think even the coaching staff, you know, reported that, you know, of course we've spent some time working on the option. We know that Auburn's going to do some of that anyways. They're certainly going to do some more coming out of that game. And so probably playing a Georgia Southern's the best type of opponent that we could have played going into the Auburn game.
No, that's a good point. And Kyle Frazier, obviously given his size, right, and his makeup, you know, the number one recruit of the nation quarterback-wise last year, you did think that you were going to see some of that. And he did have some success of just running his best impression of Cam Newton a couple times. But I'm sure that kid didn't run the triple option in high school like he was asked to do, and he did look very uncomfortable. I think they had one run of 12 yards from him, and McCaleb got a 10-yard run with his speed, but they really shut down Dyer pretty good. I was kind of surprised that Auburn abandoned the run so quickly, or let's just say they abandoned Michael Dyer, because he came into the game as a second leading rusher in the SEC, and you and I know that, you know, he's played some good ball this year, and I'm surprised they only gave him the rock 13 times in this ball game.
Well, running the ball is something you certainly have to commit to. And now, granted, it's hard to commit to it against our defense because, you know, you're going to look for soft spots and, you know, you're going to game plan and you're going to think that you might know where some are. And when you find out that they're not there, you might just be left wanting to move on and try something else. And I can certainly understand that against our defense, and that's what we really like, because I think that the strength of our defense is in the secondary personally. And so that really plays right into our hands. You know, and so I'm kind of half-baked on this one. I understand why they would want to move away from the run, but, you know, you got to jump in with both feet, and you've got to keep pounding away, and you've got to keep pounding away. And it's the two-yard gains, you know, in the first and second quarter that can open up to 6 and 7 yard, you know, runs, you know, late in the game. And, you know, that's where the LSU game was so physical, because, you know, they continue to attempt to run the ball because, you know, that's who they are, and they're a physical team. And it just seemed Auburn wasn't a physical team. And I think we know that with kind of the style of offense that they've tried to run this season, that they're not that physical of a team, and they have a younger line. But it has to be who you are, and it's not who they are.
What else jumped out at you on defense?
You know, I'm going to give a hats off to Vinny Sunseri. He was tabbed to step in the nickel and dime for Lowry, but he had to actually take over for Barron. Barron went out, and, you know, it was ironic to me. You know, the camera was right on him when he got dinged and went to the sideline. And, you know, they even panned with him going to the sideline, and Saban talked to him and him sitting on the bench. And Vern and Gary said absolutely nothing about it.
That was surprising, don't you think?
Yeah, because that was early. He's sort of a star player, you know, in a negative sense. He played a pivotal role in the game last year. And so he's one of the guys that you look for. He's an All-America, you know, performer. And then so he, on your air, literally camera on him, he gets hurt and goes to the bench and stand next to the coach. And it's two quarters later before they say anything about him. And I'm actively watching to see if, you know, if I can see him in,
yeah,
in
where's
the
number
footage.
Four? And, I was doing the not, same thing. Yeah.
Yeah, and he's not there. And Vinny Sinceri's playing. And, you know, he's a co-leader, I guess not at the top of the board, but near the top of the board in terms of tackles. He had six of them. And so I thought that he stepped in and played very well. And that's something that certainly I was, you know, cognizant of. There were a couple times in the fourth quarter where I thought, you know, Auburn was starting to move the ball. You know, maybe in the third and quarter, there were times where they were starting to move the ball. And I thought, boy, here's where we miss Barron, because he has that, you know, and nothing against Vinny, but, you know, Barron with the experience and the instincts, you know, he's filling some of those holes that are not being filled right now. You know, on the one hand, you know, high praise for Vinny for stepping in, playing a lot more than he expected. But, you know, it just also goes to show the value that Barron brings to the table.
It does. And part of this now, I think, is the way we scored, you know, how quickly we scored with the pick six, and then how quickly Trent scored. Because I went back and looked at that, because the offensive stats were, you know, they only had the 40-something yards after three quarters, and then they finished with the 140 yards. And I'm like, well, damn, the 40 yards looked a lot better. But when you go back and look at it, you know, the fourth quarter, they had one drive that was 11 plays, 50 yards, 5 minutes off the clock, and another one, 12 plays, 46 yards, 6 minutes off the clock. Well, those were sandwiched around our quick scores. And so the defense is having to trot right back out there. And it is frustrating that they were able to have those, you know, if you want some coaching points for Saban, I'm sure he's frustrated that, you know, they held the ball and didn't get off the field on third down in the fourth quarter on those two drives, regardless of the situation. One other thing I want to ask you about, because I was actually going to mention that as well on Barron. You know, from a Bama fan's perspective, I love that Gary Danielson, I hated that they didn't talk about him walking off the field. Maybe he's banged up. But did you notice that he did, almost like he was, you know, the PR guy for the University of Alabama, he pretty much told the nation as he was walking off the field that he went back and watched the film again, and that there were two touchdowns that Barron could have stopped if he would have been playing with two arms instead of one. He pretty much was saying, Auburn, you shouldn't have won the game.
Yeah.
If it wasn't for Barron being hurt, you wouldn't have won the game. And I was like, you go, Gary. I love that.
No, and that's true. And if we could list probably about the top 10 things, if this one thing happened, you know, or didn't happen, or rolled the other way, the outcome of last year.
He called not having Barron out there, like you're just talking about in this game. I just love that he just reminded the nation that him being out last year was huge.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Hey, one other thing on Sunseri, because did you notice that Barron did come back in the game?
Yeah, Barron did come back at different times.
Because I saw
him
blocking on the pick six to Milner. Yep. He was in the back. He was in deep coverage on that play.
Yeah, I was going to say he was in on the pick, and so he was definitely in. I don't know if we were schematically doing things that, you know, you have to think schematically. You know, Barron's going to be more versed in what we're doing and when, you know, down and distance type situations. So I don't know if that was the driver or we were just giving, you know, Vinny a blow at that point because, you know, he's been playing, you know, so many more snaps than he was prepared. Now we're kind of rotating Barron in to give Vinny a rest. I don't know which it was, but yeah, he definitely did catch some snaps.
Hey, real quick, and we can talk about this at future podcasts, but, you know, we saw some of Perry given the situation without Lowry. And so we were able to see Nick Perry out there some, you know, sophomore get some playing time. But what does that say to these other guys? I mean, we've had some pretty heralded guys that, you know, pretty high praise come in there. And what does that say to Jarek Williams and Nick Perry that Sunseri got as much playing time as he did? What does it say to Phelan not getting worked in like we talked about might happen? I mean, you know, even Ha-Ha. I mean, no offense to Sunseri, but Ha-Ha was the number one safety in the nation coming in. Does it just speak to how complex this defense is? And I don't want to point fingers, but how does Sunseri, I mean, granted his dad's a coach and it's in his blood, but hell, Nick Perry's been in the system for a couple years and so has Jarek Williams. We didn't see much of them.
Yeah, I don't exactly know how to break that down. You know, I guess it's easy to think Sunseri and Ha-Ha, and you could potentially say that Sunseri's more of the strong safety and Ha-Ha is more of the free safety. And you think of true freshmen, they're not learning both positions, and so we're splitting them as resources and teaching them only one of the two safety positions so they can, you know,
I could buy that with Ha-Ha, but what about the other two?
Well, the other two, I don't have an answer. I can't be
as... It
makes
you worried, right?
I can't be as... Well, worried maybe not is the right word, but I can't be as reasoned and thoughtful in as to why they're not the ones stepping in because they have been in the system a little bit. And so, you know, and this is a topic for another podcast.
Sure.
But, you know, that's going to be on my list of things that I am very interested and keenly want to tune into in spring practice and A-Day is how our defensive backfield fleshes out. And in particular, you know, when you take a Jarek and a Nick Perry, are they going to be in the mix? And where in the mix are they going to be? That's a prelude to a pre-spring podcast that we'll have to do.
Sure. I just wanted to mention those guys' names for people because I think that's very key that a true freshman, you know, had to step in and play as much as he did. Anything else about defense?
No, I'm good on well, you know what? I'm going to say Hightower, you know, with quiet dominance. He led the team with 9 tackles. You know, he just did what he does, you know, which was good to see. I thought it was funny that, you know, again, I'm becoming less and less of a fan of Vern and Gary the more I watch them. And, you know, when they say, you know, we haven't mentioned, you know, Hightower's name the whole game, and then you find out he's our leading tackler. And so it makes you wonder, why didn't you mention his name?
Right. No, that's true. Well, jumping to special teams, man, didn't we say in last week's podcast, I believe, that Cade Foster had his second touchback of the year?
Last week he had his third of the season on his 63rd kick.
Okay, so third of the season on the 63rd kick. Thank you for that. When they started off the game kicking it through the end zone, did Vern or Gary, didn't they say something like that was like his 32nd of the year?
Yes.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I guess he was pissed off because, you know, we didn't allow him to kick long field goals, and so he was able to put some extra juice because you look at the kickoff numbers and you see that we had 2 touchbacks in the game when we only have had 3 on the year, and you think, man, he did spectacular. And then you look at that crappy average of 60 yards, and you compare it to Auburn's kicker, and he averaged 70 yards, and it's like, what the crap, man?
Yeah, it was 2 touchbacks. I mean, now he's at 5 on the season and 2 in the, which is that, holy cow. You know, we've put up some touchdowns. You should, with a high-quality kicker, we could have games where you've had 5. You know,
he's had lots of practice here. What's that
deal? Well, you know, it just tells me that he can do it. it's just, I don't know if it's mechanics, if it's form, if it's whatever. He kicked one of the touchbacks against the wind. And you think, you know, the leg is there. He's just not harnessing what he has. And maybe he's just young and some good coaching. I don't know what it is, but it's definitely frustrating. And then you get the short kicks. And one of the short kicks leads to, you know, and it's not just the short kick because, you know, it's the whole coverage team. But, hey, if you kick it out of the end zone, they can't return it. And so we get a short kick that they return for a touchdown. Very frustrating. That's two games in a row that we've given up a kickoff, you know, for a touchdown.
And I think I want to touch on this for a quick second because, you know, last year's game was 24-7 going in the half. And Auburn scored a late touchdown at the end of the first half to enable them to get that 7 points. And so while I thought we were going to kick their butt, it was very ironic that the score was 24-7 at half, and they come out and score quickly, just like they did in last year's game. And so the announcers are having a field day with this because now it's a 10-point ball game.
For sure.
And to your point, what is so incredibly frustrating is the kickoff at the end of the first half, he nails it 69 yards. And then he kicks this one 53 yards. And the other thing I've got to touch on is it might be time for some personnel changes on kickoffs because, you know, other guys did not stay in their lanes, DePriest being one of them. But John Fulton is your safety guy. And he's the guy who has cost them the touchdown 2 weeks in a row. And the reason I'm saying that like that is he didn't cause the other problems. But by damn, you better tackle him at the 20-25-yard line.
Sure.
And both times, he has not done his job, and his job's the most important job out of all 11.
You know, he's kind of the final safety valve, and so you think if, you know, if we're going to miss on the first, second, third things, then let's not miss on the fourth one, too. And, you know, of course, in both instances, we've just missed on everything, and they've returned it, you know, for the touch. Definitely frustrating. I hate to think that we're regressing on special teams. We're certainly not improving. Even a decent outing, we made 2 field goals, which try not to be a sarcastic ass when I say that, but we did make 2 field goals. We did have 2 touchbacks, and then we go and blow it by giving up a kickoff return and really having limited return yards ourselves. So, you know, I kind of throw my hands up on special teams. You know, even when we correct something, we screw it up somewhere else.
No, that's true, and I just wanted to point out the Fulton thing just because I'm sorry, dude. It's you on both of those plays. I thought Shelley came in, you know, a pressure situation, and I was pleased that, you know, this is what I do best. You know, I shouldn't have been put in on that long kick against LSU. My job's the short kicks, and, you know, he did a good job on those.
Yeah, if we're kicking inside the 35, you know, if it's a kick of 35 or under, you know, maybe 33 or under, I feel even a little bit better. Then I feel really good that we're going to make it. But, you know, that's a tall order. You know, taking the 35 to 50-yard field goals out of the realm of possibility, you know, that really limits, that really restricts what you can do. But if you're going to address that and how you play calls to be more aggressive to get that much further down the field, then it can be overcome. And, you know, it again is just knowing what your strengths and what your limitations are and executing accordingly. That's what, you know, we got one more game, right?
Right.
So that's what we're going to have to solve for.
Yeah, and whoever that game is against, to your point, if you're at the 30-yard line, it's a 47-yarder. And so to your point, I hope we see more of this in their next bowl game as far as just the aggressive play calling whenever we get down there. Anything else on special teams?
No. We're going to have to improve in that area.
Offensive game ball. I'm going to have to give my offensive game ball to Smelly. I know he's been your boy a few weeks, and, you know, he's growing. You know, he went from getting his first touchdown a couple weeks ago to now I think he's had 3 on the year and in the course of 2 or 3 weeks. And he's growing out of the mini game ball category. You know, he's trying to become a headliner here. And, you know, he just had a very good day. I mean, blocking was phenomenal. Running these routes and selling the blocking and then bleeding out on those plays that he did. I got to highlight a key catch. I mean, there was a bad McCarron pass early in that game and to him on a 3rd and short, and it was kind of thrown at his helmet. And I still don't know how he hauled in that pass at the sideline and kept it from even having to be reviewed. He just played a heck of a ball game.
Yeah, I'm going to try to squeeze Smelly into a mini game ball, you know, one more time, you know, maybe while it'll still fit. You know, he had 6 catches for 86 yards, but his 6 catches went for 5 first downs and 1 touchdown. That's just pretty darn impressive. He reminds me of the lineage now of senior tight ends that are really kind of breaking out and contributing. And if you think of, you know, a Colin Peake and then a Preston Dial and then a Brad Smelly, and you can kind of even put next to him Michael Williams, who's really had more of a breakout this season. If I'm a tight end recruit, I'm noticing that, and I'm thinking, man, I want to go there, and maybe I can get some of that action early because I feel that I'm so talented, because they're making stars, certainly contributors at a high level, some of these tight ends. And if I can go do that for a couple of years, then maybe I have a shot at the league.
And let's face it, right? Colin Peake got picked up. Preston Dial got picked up. It's very possible one of these guys, you know, especially Michael Williams, might get a flyer as a blocking tight end. And so you potentially could have 3 Alabama tight ends in the NFL, all granted, you know, being drafted in different rounds. And maybe Michael Williams is even a practice squad guy, but these guys are all getting looks in the NFL for sure.
Sure. If you're cashing NFL checks, you know, that certainly is a recruiting tool. And, you know, some of the highly ranked recruits, tight end recruits in the Southeast, you'd have to start giving a nod to, you know, at least a look at Alabama, because, you know, we're not afraid to use the tight end in key situations in the games. And, you know, we had 2 tight ends. Well, I guess Williams scored on a 2-point conversion, but, you know, we had 2 scoring plays with tight ends this week. And, you know, last week was the same. And you kind of go back throughout the season, we've had a number of touchdowns and big plays by tight ends.
No, that's true. What about defense? Who gets your game ball there?
You know, I've kind of run through the stats on this, but I'm giving my mini game ball to Vinny. You know, the fact that he stepped in for Lowry and then, without as much prep, stepped in for Barron, you know, had 6 tackles, performed pretty well on the day. As a true freshman, I'm giving my mini defensive game ball nod to Vinny.
You know, I guess it is important to mention, because it is a complex defense, that does speak a little bit to his intellect. Because on the one hand, Lowry's playing 25 yards off the ball, and the next thing you know, you're having to be 5 yards off the ball at linebacker, which you really are linebacker action, like Barron's been doing, and you haven't been doing that since the A-Day game. That's a big challenge to go from being 25 yards off the ball to 5 yards off the ball from one play to the next.
Where are you going with the defensive mini game ball?
I'm going to have to do Damian Square. I think he had a very good day as a senior. He just really held the edge. You know, he had a tackle for loss. He had a sack. I mean, he had 4 tackles on the day. While I thought that Jesse Williams and thought Josh Chapman played well, Damian just had some big Courtney Upshaw-like moments. Obviously, Courtney Upshaw had his typical great day, but Damian really did his job on the other side of the ball there.
He really did. He had a big sack early. I thought he played, you know, very well. I think that's a good nod. You know, Damian Square is certainly a plugger. He's been a good player on our teams. And again, he's going to be one of those guys that, you know, quietly we may have a hard time replacing.
No, he will definitely go back into the category of the Brandon Dietrichs and Lorenzo Washingtons. He's kind of grown into that role during the year. Do you want to mention a little bit about the Christmas coming early to the Alabama football team?
Well, I think that, you know, last week, and we spent some time with it, you know, it was an Alabama Christmas, and had the opportunity, as we're recording here on, you know, Sunday night, had the opportunity to see the BCS show. And, you know, we're kind of entrenched in the 2nd place in the BCS polls, a pretty good margin over Oklahoma State. They've been running stats over the weekend that 5 times in the BCS era has a team been ranked 1 or 2. And they've been idle in the last week. In all 5 instances, those teams stayed in the top 2. And so that and the point differential that we have currently over 3rd place Oklahoma State, you know, all really bode well for us having the number 2 spot, in which case, you know, we're liable to match up with LSU again in the championship game.
Did you notice that they also mentioned that we had overtaken Oklahoma State to be number 2 in the computer rankings as well?
Yeah, and
that was huge, I thought.
Yeah, that was significant, right, that we were, you know, that we had the edge not only in the voter polls, but then also sort of in the computer metrics, which, you know, comprise, you know, a third of the equation. So that's certainly positive. Now, I'll tell you this, that's not going to stop me from rooting for Oklahoma to knock them off just for good measure, though.
No, and, you know, you would have to like our chances there, right? Because, you know, Stoops is going to be pretty motivated. You know he's pretty pissed off at the way that came down, and you know he's going to be pretty motivated to try to go out there and hang some points on them.
That's going to be a really good game because there is some animosity in that rivalry, and they're both really, you know, competing at this point for different things, but they're very strong teams competing. In essence, they could still, even if Oklahoma State is going to remain at third, they could both still potentially be vying for BCS games and then certainly the better matchups in the BCS games. So they have a lot to play for, and they're two high-quality teams. That's going to be a fun game to watch. I'm going to be rooting for Stoops and his Sooners.
Sure. Hopefully we get to do another LSU preview show. Well, a LSU preview show part two, what we need to do differently this time.
Well, you know, that's right. I was thinking about, you know, if we do another bowl game, you know, pre-show, which we certainly should, and then, of course, we break down the bowl game. If we ended up doing two more shows with LSU, we're going to be pretty tired of talking about them. But, you know, given the alternatives.
I started to say, I'm glad we get to talk about them again.
Yeah, given the alternatives, I welcome the opportunity. So as it stands now, you know, LSU is going to face Georgia. Georgia's, you know, they've been playing better. And so that'll be a good matchup, and that'll be fun to watch. I don't think it has any bearing on us, you know, solidifying that number two spot. So, you know, that probably makes it a more fun game to get to watch. And then, you know, polish that off with Oklahoma knocking off Oklahoma State next Saturday. I think, you know, we'll really solidify our spot in the January 9th championship game, which means that we're going to have to come back, you know, sometime maybe by the end of the year, first part of January, and do a championship pregame show.
Oh, absolutely. Maybe we can do it on location.
Well, potentially we could do that. But, you know, if we can't do the pregame show on location, we probably can do a postgame show on location.
No, that'll work. All right, man. Well, I enjoyed it and look forward to doing the next one whenever we break down those pesky Tigers again.
Absolutely. Well, this has been another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Thanks for listening. Be sure to drop us an email at alabamafootballpodcast@gmail.com to be added to our mailing list, and follow us on Twitter at @BamaFootballPod. Until next time, roll Tide.
Blow the horn. Let's go.
Everything that we do every day, we want to be a champion.
Get your mind right and let's go. Do the little things. Win every day.
It's the someplace they play football.
Everything with an attitude.
All right.